This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
Thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast. This edition of the Inch Podcast recorded March 26th, 2012. And we're here with our regular podcast contributors. And we're obviously going to talk a lot about the NCAA tournament regionals this past weekend and the upcoming Frozen Four. Pleased to bring in the staff. We'll start with WCHA senior writer Jess Myers. Hello, Jess.
Hi, guys. Good to be here.
Good to have you.
Tiring weekend, fun weekend, but now we get a little break. So
yeah, there's a little window.
Yep.
I'm going to ask some of you veteran college hockey journalists, which would be you, Jess, and Bus to some extent, about how much it sucked when the games were that Thursday right after the...
We'll talk about that. That was,
we'll get to that later.
A different era.
Yeah. Also, CCHA senior writer James V. Dowd. Hello, James.
Good evening, Gladdy. It was nice to get back to the mainland and see some hockey this weekend.
Yeah, off the island, back
last,
in town.
Last 2 weekends.
Yeah, and venturing from city to city and state to state.
That's true.
And now you're looking forward to going up north for the Frozen Four.
That's right.
Yeah.
More west than north, though.
Okay, yeah.
Also, Hockey East senior writer, Kevin Zeese. Hi, Kevin.
Howdy, guys. Good to be here tonight.
And Inch editor Mike Ottobus.
Hey, everybody. What's going on?
Oh, nothing too much.
Let's get crack-a-lackin'.
Yeah. Let's start getting discussion right away. We'll start with our guys who were on the scene. These are the Saturday-Sunday regionals just completed. And, Jess, you know, when you play a team six times in the same year, you're going to have a mixed bag of results, but... on the day yesterday, Sunday afternoon or evening, it was certainly Minnesota's game against North Dakota.
Opportunistic and got back to doing a lot of good habits. I wrote about that third line that Don Lucia kind of pieced together a week ago. They wind up with, you know, each guy on this makeshift third line has a goal and an assist, which was a nice little way to go out. You know, take nothing away from Minnesota's effort. But I asked the North Dakota guys about this afterwards. They looked gassed. I mean, they just didn't have the skate speed that they had in previous games. And especially those top two defensemen, Forbert and Blood, just didn't seem to have the jump that they had previously. I mean, I think you saw a season where Hextall had to rely on so many of those key guys over and over again. I think you just saw that catch up with them finally. But take nothing away from what Minnesota did. I mean, that's obviously a very good team and has been all season.
Yeah, that's a club that really put it together when it had to. Bus, you were particularly impressed, I know, with how they looked yesterday in all those aspects.
Yeah, I think we've seen glimpses of that from them the entire season, and obviously we see a lot of Gopher hockey because they're on TV all the time. But I think... as best as I can remember, that's the best 60-minute effort I've seen them put together the entire season. You know, just everything clicking, skating hard, skating north-south. Patterson was solid. He didn't have to be great, but they don't need him to be great if they're playing the type of game they can play and playing the type of game they want to play. And they really... You know, I think the real interesting thing that came out of that game yesterday or Sunday was that you know, in a couple of cases, and then obviously the second goal for North Dakota by that time the game was decided. But you know, it's 2-1 or it's 2-0, and North Dakota comes right back, and Christo scores, you know, less than a minute or about a minute later to make it 2-1, and you know, you're thinking, okay, Minnesota had that momentum going. North Dakota scores, is it going to shift? And Minnesota, to their credit, didn't let it shift.
Yeah, there were a lot of Minnesota fans right at that point thinking, oh boy, here we go again. You know,
yeah.
Because it had been, 8 days earlier or whatever, Minnesota had that 3-0 lead in the second period, and it just disappeared in a hurry. And like you say, to Minnesota's credit, I mean, North Dakota didn't get another shot in the period until like the last 10 seconds.
Yeah, 12-2 so, shots. You know, the Crystal one went in, and then it was all Gophers.
Yeah, and you know, it's 4-1 after two, and, you know, credit Hackstall. I mean, he pulls his goalie with 3.5 minutes left or something like that, and his great line about that, somebody said, you know, when did you lose hope? And he said, you know, I didn't pull our goalie hoping we could make it close.
Yeah.
You know? They still had every intention of winning that game, but they just – I don't think there was much left in the tank by that point.
Well, I think that – and I maybe this is too premature to get into this now since we just started talking about the regionals. But, you know, I think coming into the tournament, most people thought that this would be BC's to lose. But, you know, after seeing BC in the Northeast Regional, and after seeing Minnesota, I'm not so sure that it's BC's to lose anymore. I mean, I think, you know, I kind of like Minnesota's the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Two quick notes about this regional before we move on. Number one, I wanted to credit the two coaches that were out on Saturday. You know, Jack Parker, you can't say enough about a guy who's been around as long as he had and was able to make chicken salad out of that mess that he was given this season. You know, he talked about the captains on this team having the hardest job since, you know, the Travis Roy incident back in 96 or whatever it was. I mean, just trying to keep that team together and to get them as far as he did was something. The other shout out I want to give is to Andy Murray. And not necessarily, you know, for what he did, although he had a great first season and I think that's a program on the rise, but there was that controversial goal, no goal, that would have tied the game for Western in the second period. The refs look at it forever, and they decide it's no goal, and probably rightly so. And Andy Murray says, you know, they wanted to come over and give me an explanation, and I just waved him off. He said, let's drop the puck and play hockey. What does it matter what the explanation says?
Yeah.
And he said, that's one thing about college hockey. He said, the refs spend way too much time talking to the coaches. Let's just play. And I thought, amen. How many times have we seen, you know, where there's a pushing and shoving and a bunch of penalties, and then they have to spend 10 more minutes explaining it to both benches? Just play. So,
yeah.
God although bless them. Definitely from time to time I've heard coaches who will complain, oh, they had this 7-minute review, but then they also ask for a 4-minute explanation at the bench, you know?
Right.
I know you just watched it on TV 10 times, but I'm going to still try and change your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely one point. I want to get into that Western and North Dakota review a little bit. I had the game on where I was, but didn't have any sound. What
so
was
you
the
want an explanation?
What was the ruling on? Yeah, I want an explanation. I'm no Andy Murray.
I may have gotten this wrong. I thought the ruling was that the net had been dislodged before the puck crossed the goal line. Then I heard after the fact from Steve Piotrowski that they ruled that it had been directed in by the player's arm or hand.
Yeah,
that they had made a motion to direct the puck into the net.
That's what I saw. So, yeah, I mean...
And obviously, you know, plays, pivotal like, thing. I mean, would have tied the game.
It's a good call.
Yep.
So, okay, good.
But no, good regional. I mean, like we expected, 4 pretty good teams you know, the crowds were a disappointment, but I think that can be said in a lot of places.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, I guess, later. Let's get to the Northeast region. James, you were there. Results probably what we expected with BC and Duluth winning first-round games and the Eagles headed through to Tampa. Any quirks about how it happened that are worth bringing up?
I guess I would start with the things I wrote about after it. You know, two things that really made an impression on me were, one, Minnesota Duluth is really good, especially the top two lines there, and hats off to Jack Connolly for a great senior season, and we saw in the second half of the main game just how special he can be. But you look at BC, and, you know, before the game, I sat there and I took a look at the line charts, added up point totals, and it's like, man, both, you know, BC has three lines that almost any team in the country would be would like to have as their top line, and so it just makes them so difficult to defend. Because even if one line's having an off night or the chemistry isn't quite there that night, you know, there's two others that can pick it up, and that depth to me was really impressive. But really where BC also built out from is Parker Milner. I mean, I'm not going to say he was spectacular on the weekend, and you know, York said after the first game, the victory over Air Force, you know, he didn't make an inordinate amount of saves, but you know, he made the saves they needed to, and especially BC did their best to give it away in the third period with a string of penalties there. They ended up with a series of three penalties in a row that put them 5-on-3 for a little while, and then they cleared that up and then had another penalty immediately after, I think, and that was where I thought Milner really shined and looked like the kind of goalie that can win a championship.
What's the last team you can remember, guys, having that strong a team and then getting that kind of goaltending? You know, usually when you have that top flight number one goaltender, the team in front of him maybe isn't as good. Is it Brian Elliott with that Wisconsin group?
Well, that's a tough question. Yeah, that's probably fair. Although, thinking back to Detroit a couple years ago, I mean, John Mews was playing as well as he did in college, and BC was just smoking. I mean,
yeah,
obviously they rolled everybody that year in the Frozen Four. But yeah, I mean, it might even go further back than Elliott.
Yeah, well, it's a good bunch. There's no doubt about it. Interested to see how All-America voting breaks down with Eastern goalies.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, especially with some of the league bias and things that people have.
Yeah, well, you've got the Union guy, Grosinick, is a Hobie finalist, Hobie 10, you know. And you got Milner for the best team.
I think Carr would be in there.
Yeah, Doug Carr is in the conversation. Joe Cannata probably in the conversation. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I think one thing you can say in watching both of those games that is a testament to Milner is that. At least, and Dowd, you might have a better feel for this, but, you know, BC, I thought they played, you know, a couple of C games. They're okay. They're good enough, obviously. But they didn't give up a goal. And I think that's, you know, I think that's more of a result, you know, more of a result of how Milner played and more of a reflection on him than it is on the team's effort. You know, I thought BC was okay at times, but nothing spectacular.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but, you know, and Milner will give credit to his teammates, and I do agree to some extent. If, you know, we talked a little bit before the podcast about Michigan, and we can get to those games later, but, you know, that's a team that's been sunk, you know, two out of the last 3 years by not cleaning up the trash in front of the net when the goalie makes the first save, and I thought Milner did a great job in that he didn't give up a lot of rebounds, but when he did, you know, those guys like Tommy Cross and Patch Elber, you know, those guys were there, and Ed Shea, they were all there to clear out the middle. They had sticks in the right lanes, and they were able to tie up the guys that might have been able to knock in rebounds. So I guess I agree. It wasn't a spectacular showing, but it was pretty solid all around. They didn't make a lot of mistakes defensively either.
Yeah,
James, let me ask you, because I was in a press box writing and kind of glancing up now and then watching the Minnesota Duluth Maine game, was much made after the game about that second Maine goal on the play where, you know, the net at the one end came off and, you know, half the guys on the ice quit? And
well, you know, I guess Sandlin kind of said after the game, and he's right, you know, this is why you tell guys to play through to the whistle. You know, there was no whistle. The rule that they gave was that if a team knocks, you know, if the net is knocked off the moorings by a team and the other team has an offensive chance, they'll let them play through that offensive chance to its completion. And so I guess that was straight from the rule book, and you know what, you know, I think everybody recognized that a lot of the Duluth guys and maybe a couple of Maine guys gave up on that play, but really, I guess hats off to Mangine for following that through, and yeah, he made a pretty nice move at the other end to finish that off.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think that nobody put up a big fight because they did give out a pretty good explanation, but yeah, play to the whistle.
Speaking of plays with 10-minute review and or explanation, looks like they were looking at that forever.
Yeah. There were a lot of goals with weird circumstances. You know, there was the goal that went off the glass and in off the goalie, and Union's empty netter had a guy offside.
Yeah.
In the Saturday night game. So.
Well, the first Michigan State, going back all the way back to Friday, that first Michigan State.
Oh, right.
No goal, no goal, whatever you want to call it, was, and that was a pretty lengthy review also. In fact, that might have been the longest one of the weekend.
Yeah.
And they had the Michigan Cornell review, too, on the goalie interference. But
oh, right, right.
I mentioned this in one of my notebook pieces over the weekend, but this is one of the things that, as far as the net being off the moorings, Steve Piotrowski kind of reiterated, that's one of the things they really want to look at this summer when they meet to talk about rules, is giving the officials more leeway to let goals count. You know, right now the rule states if the net is off or if it's up or if it's in any way out of position, play is dead. And they want to make it, you know, or some people want to make it a situation where, you know, if a puck is obviously going into the net as the net is coming off the moorings, they can allow that goal to stand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Right. You know, on the fluke BC goal from last night, you know, that kind of flipped up over the shoulder of Kenny Reiter. You know, he knocked the net off himself. If they would have disallowed that because he backed into it, that would have been I don't know if that had been an appropriate use of the rule book. So, anyway,
I guess if just two other quick notes from that. I guess one, you can read the coverage from there, but I was a lot more impressed with Air Force than I thought I would be. And I think that game was close because of Air Force and not because Boston College was awful.
Right.
I thought Air Force played a really solid game. And finally just getting a chance to see Spencer Abbott and Jack Connolly play in person. The first time this year anyway. I saw them both play last year, but first time this year in person. I was really impressed with both of them and want to commend them both for excellent seasons, and they're worthy of all the honors that are coming their way, even though it didn't work out for their team.
Oh, there you go.
Go ahead.
I like the point you made, JVD, about how measured Air Force was. You know, they made decisions rather than, just go out and pound everybody and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it makes sense, I guess, for a military academy, but solid, disciplined, and very, very level-headed and well-coached.
Indeed.
I was thinking about that with the Hobie voting, you know, with Kirby from Air Force being a Hobie finalist. When they talk about off-ice issues and academics and stuff like that, I thought, you know, the military academy guys are almost like on a different playing field as far as that stuff goes, as far as, you know, service and academics and all of that. Different world.
Yeah. Which direction do we want to move in now?
I would say go Midwest.
All right. Yeah, Kevin, you were at Green Bay for the second round of game, or second game, I should say. Third game, second day.
There we go. Spit it out.
I'll get there eventually. The one thing that stood out to me, and, you know, we're going to talk about what some people have referred to as the bottom half of the draw, or, you know, the lesser-known teams, and that's fine. You know, we know, we're college hockey people. We know they can play, and they've been there all year. These teams we're going to discuss now may not have the name recognition of a Minnesota or Boston College, or North Dakota and Maine, and Minnesota Duluth. But, you know, people look at a 2-1 game with Ferris and Cornell, and they're all boring this and boring that. There were some back-check plays both sides in that game that were unbelievable to me. Like, you look down at every line rush, every dump-in, you know, guys knew their assignments and executed. You know, there were a couple plays by, I'm not singling out North Dakota, but, you know, where they were standing next to the guy on the Gophers when goals went in. But in that Ferris-Cornell game, they were on him and had a stick checked, you know, and had a presence that they were not going to be responsible for that minus. And then two of the times that it did occur, you know, were the first two goals there. You know, the 2-on-1 with Ferris getting that goal, and then the answer by Mowry for Cornell. So, well,
that first Ferris goal was
on the power play goal,
bit of luck for Cornell.
I meant the winner, yeah.
Where Eric Axel's stick broke on the opening draw.
Right.
And that was one thing in talking to a couple of folks that I know who were watching the game at home had said that the TV crew didn't really notice that or acknowledge that at all. And that was a huge part of it, where you had so many guys around the front of the net there, and Axel's running, you know, rushing back into the play after he had to go back to the bench to get another stick. So,
and they were shorthanded already.
Exactly. If that doesn't happen, you know, chances are, you know, that puck doesn't go in the net. So, it's just a bad bounce of luck there, I think, for Cornell. But you're right, absolutely, on the two goals that were scored then after that, that they were, you know, the results of the one missed assignment, basically. Cornell's goal was a beautiful headman pass and sprung Dustin Mowry on a breakaway. The game winner then that Ferris scored was because the Cornell guys failed to recognize that the power play was ending. Yep. And pinched in to try and keep the puck in the zone instead of getting back and playing solid. But I definitely thought both of those two teams were very much mirror images of each other. Very, very sound defensively, very hard-working teams. There weren't a whole lot of grade-A chances for either side, and I think that definitely echoes with what you had said there with both teams making sure that, you know, they're picking up their man and getting in passing lanes, getting in shooting lanes. And you know, if you're somebody who likes to watch a lot of the, you know, the sound fundamentals on defense, that was definitely a good game to watch.
Well, welcome to Ferris State hockey. Yeah. That's the one thing they do year in and year out, and most of the time people don't pay attention. But that's
It's, you know, it does provide a nice contrast. You know, had watched the Minnesota game a little bit on Sunday then after I'd gotten home, and had a very much, you know, you've got the constant pace of the Minnesota games, and then you see a team like Ferris that you're not going to be able to run against like that. And so it's definitely, you know, I know a lot of people don't like necessarily that type of play, but, you know, it's definitely a sound strategy. And if that's what works for your team, then by all means do it.
Yeah. And I don't think, I mean, I wouldn't call it a trapping strategy either. You know, I think that's,
they're in on a forecheck.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. I think it's just more recognizing your assignment and making sure that you are playing sound defensively first.
It's your read.
You can't lose a game if you're not allowing the other team a chance to score. And I think that's more the mindset as opposed to trap, counter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think that's the difference between those teams, is that they'll take their shots when, you know, when it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. That's one thing and I hadn't really thought of it until you started talking about that championship game, especially, is, you know, I thought all three of those games in Green Bay were very well played. Mm-hmm. You know, not a ton of mistakes, and the few mistakes that were made ended up in goals.
Yeah.
Or pretty much, you know, just about every time.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, watching, and maybe this is more of a testament to the style that the teams that got sent to the West Regional play, but there was some sloppy stuff in that regional.
Yeah, I definitely would say, you know, watching Friday's games, Denver didn't have a whole lot of grade A scoring chances.
No.
And few they did, Taylor Nelson was absolutely outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cornell in the game against Michigan on Friday night, they looked dead in the water the first 2 minutes. I mean, I was sitting here watching those and just thinking, wow, this game is going to be over in a hurry. And they got fortunate, I think, with the review, with the interfering of the goaltender there, called the timeout, kind of got his Mike Schaefer got his boys straightened around, and they played very, very solidly the entire rest of the way. So I thought it was especially good that, you know, they were able to fight through the penalties, and they spent an awful lot of time on the penalty kill that game. And still, Michigan didn't have a whole lot of grade A chances outside the first 2 minutes.
Isles was really good, too.
Absolutely. He was very sound fundamentally. And you know, like I said, it was a very well-played game if you're into a solid, sound fundamental teams playing.
That brings me to a point I'll make across all the regions. The state of goaltending in college hockey right now is very strong.
I mean, yeah.
You've got Taylor Nelson, first-team All-CCHA. Sean Hunwick, Holby finalist. He was second team. You've got Andy Isles, you know, ECAC hockey second team. Grossnick, Holby finalist. Parker Milner, who we were just raving about, didn't make the All-Hockey East teams because of Carr and Kanata got those spots. You know, and then you throw in guys like Matt Alora from RIT and Volkening from Air Force. And
you look out west, Patterson as well.
Patterson had a great year.
Hammond from Bowling Green.
Yeah.
Torf from Air Force, by the way.
Good. Yeah, I mean, Torf was pretty strong this weekend.
You could easily name 30 goaltenders who could be, you know, at least getting all league recognition without any problem.
Yeah. And the CCHA awards, Bowling Green guy didn't even get any. Hammond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Ohio State was strong in the first half of the season because of Cal Heater, yeah.
Connor Knapp, did he even get anything?
Knapp was honorable mention, and Kapalka was honorable mention.
Yeah. Remember 10 years ago when Adam Hauser beat Matt Yates in the national championship game? We had that long discussion about whether goaltending even mattered anymore. Yeah, that's come full circle.
Yeah.
Well, and if you want the contrary, look at Notre Dame. When you don't have the goaltending,
amen.
You go home early.
What's the NHL line in the playoffs? Goaltending is 75% of the game unless you don't have it, and then it's 100% of the game.
Yeah.
Dan Cloutier said.
Cloutes. Who was back to the podcast? Cloutes.
Who was the New Hampshire goalie? All this, Ayers, Mike Ayers. Yeah. God, just savaged by fans.
Yeah. I still think he has the record for all-time victories in Hockey East, by the way.
I know, and they just hated
it. It's either him or Muse. It's got to be.
I think so, yeah.
So, it's funny how that works.
Well, I think, you know, the other thing that's kind of funny, too, is, you know, you think back about maybe 10 or 12 years ago when there seemed to be, like, a run – maybe not even that long, 8 to 10, 12 years ago, someplace in that time frame, when there seemed to be a run of a lot of name goalies. You know, you had Clemenson in there, and you had Miller, and you had...
Jan Denis.
Yeah, and Dan Ellis at Omaha, and...
Brian Elliott,
you know, and...
Howard.
Yeah, guys that were right out front, and, you know...
Yeah, Jimmy Howard, wow.
Really, the face of their franchise, so to speak, Corey Schneider.
Yeah.
And you know, we've got these good goalies, but really they're not the guys. They're not the identity of their team. Other than maybe Hunwick at Michigan, I don't know that you would say that there's another goalie out there who is, you know, the marquee guy.
Yeah, you're right. I'd maybe bring Carr into that conversation.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
But I'd also probably throw Isles at Cornell in there too.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny too, because like Kent Patterson was the MVP of his regional And obviously he's been a great goalie for Minnesota, but there's nothing flashier or that interesting about his game that makes you say, wow, what an amazing goalie.
Right.
And I mean, I think Minnesota goalies too traditionally have had to be, you know, work extra hard to get noticed because the reputation is, well, they play on such good teams, how good do they have to be? And he's been really good.
Yeah, well, you're going to see four of those guys this next weekend in Tampa.
Yeah.
So, good stuff, good stuff. I didn't see much, maybe any, of the Ferris-Denver game. What were your guys' impressions on that one?
I saw a decent chunk of it. I think Kevin pretty much summed it. I think it was similar in a lot of ways to the other two games that were in that regional.
Yeah.
You know, Ferris played its game plan to a T, and Denver did not get a lot of chances. I mean, that more or less sums it up right there.
I mean, I'm just now even bringing up the box score. They only had 26 shots on goal, which, I mean, again, if you figure, you know, your shots are, you know, maybe you get one out of every three is a quality chance. You know, maybe eight chances, nine chances that they had that were, you know, decent. So I really felt like watching that game, as Buss said, you know, Ferris played their game plan to perfection. And really stifled Denver's attack and what few chances they did have, Nelson was there to clean up.
Just alluded to fatigue a little bit with North Dakota, and I think they're in kind of the same boat with Denver. It's not fatigue over the games you've played recently. You know, that has some effect. To me, it's the fatigue of the entire season.
Yep.
With those teams and patching together a lineup every Friday night and every Saturday night and knowing, you know, if you've got a knock and maybe you could use a night off, you can't get that. You got to be out there because you're the last guy on the list, you know, who can go. And that, over the long haul, might have taken some out of those two teams.
I would say so. And then you know, obviously they've got the short turnaround after the WCHA tournament and having to fly back east again then like that. And especially to prepare for an opponent that plays a very different style. You know, I think it does take a very, very heavy physical and mental toll on the players. And I don't necessarily think not having seen the game in person, I couldn't say for sure, but I think Denver looked, at least on television, to me, they looked more mentally fatigued than physically fatigued.
Well, and remember, Ferris had a week off.
Yes.
Yeah.
They lost to Bowling Green in that game. And I look at that as, you're talking about fatigue and the season and maybe fatigue's not the right word, but I worried about them being like what we've seen sometimes with in college hockey and college basketball, where a team will win a regular season title or they'll get to a benchmark they've never gotten before. And maybe we saw some of that with Western Michigan winning the CCHA playoff title and then not playing the game they wanted to in the national tournament. Maybe that defeat at home let Ferris regroup a little bit and say, hey, yes, we won the regular season title. Yes, we're happy about it. But we got a special team this year. Let's not get caught up in the fact that we did it. You know, maybe if they'd gone to the Joe, they still would have been, won the regular season. We got to the Joe. It's all good. Maybe that was a little bit of a wake-up call to them to mentally regroup and be able to live up to what this team's full potential was instead of just meeting maybe what their preseason ceiling in their mind was.
Yeah.
After the WCHA Final Five championship game, George Kwestecky was practically begging to get a Saturday regional game.
Yeah.
As opposed to a Friday game. And, you know, of course he didn't get it. He had to play on Friday. And you know, I thought about that too. Like, you know, Minnesota Duluth loses on Friday at the Final Five and they play a Saturday regional. So they get 8 days off and Denver gets six. You know, you can't underestimate what a difference that makes.
I think, though, that, you know, thinking about Denver's matchup against Ferris, you know, I think if they get matched up against a team like Maine or BU in that game where it's less about playing a team that is really focused on its job and really mentally zoned in on what it's doing. You know, maybe if they go out against, and I'm not saying Maine and BU, you know, aren't mentally focused, but, you know, maybe it's an opponent that's more apt to kind of get into a little bit of a, let the abilities take over, as opposed to sticking to the game plan. You know, maybe Denver plays better because it doesn't have to rely on that mental focus, and it can just kind of let the talent take over and go out and play hockey, as opposed to, you know, thinking punch counter punch against a team like Ferris, where you absolutely have to be zoned in 100% of the time, because obviously we saw against Cornell, when you're not, they're going to make you pay.
Indeed. Boss, we haven't talked about one region. You want to talk about your Dutch?
My Dutchman.
Go nuts.
Well, I didn't see the early game, so I can't really say a whole lot about that, because
I watched that game.
I tried to watch some of it, but to no avail.
You had a job.
Yeah.
Let me say this just quickly, because I watched that early game too. The Spartans are who we thought they were.
Yep.
They just looked like a team that's about a year away from being really good.
Yeah, well, I think there were 16 teams in the tournament, and they're, you know, if they're not 16, they're 15.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I really think, you know, for all the criticism of hiring Anastas and all that, I really do think they're building something pretty good there, but they just looked like a team that was a little bit in over their head in that game.
Yes.
I would agree with that. And another time and place, I was going to say another time and place, but I think it's actually worth discussing at some point what Anastas has gotten done there this year and what he's got lined up for the future. You know, I definitely want to give him credit for getting Michigan State there, or helping to get Michigan State there. You know, even though they were over their head, as we said.
The point, just real quick, that I wanted to add was very much to their credit. At no point did they hang their heads, look like they were giving up. That, you know, I think there might have been some recognition that Union was the better team, but that team just kept going and kept working at it. So, you know, that's not a team that anybody wants to play against, just because they're never going to give up on a puck.
That's true. But let's keep it all in perspective. They are what we thought they were.
Yes, that said.
Yeah, but
hard work is only going to take you so far.
Yeah, and that's a step up from what they were before they were.
I was just going to say. I think they're better than I thought they were. That's not to say that they're any better than they looked in the national tournament. I just didn't expect them to be there this year.
Yeah, I think if you look at that team over the past two or three years, I mean, there's been more than one occasion where they've mailed it in.
It was a step forward, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, the talent will come, I think.
I agree.
When you've got guys like Tom Newton and Kelly Miller there, who are going to, I mean, they're gonna recruit and they're going to get guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to work hard, but when you get talented guys working hard, it's a completely, completely different ball game.
Yes.
But you know, I didn't see a lot of that. I didn't see a lot of that game. I watched the entire Miami Lowell game, which was. I mean, how do you even put that game into words? I mean, it's just. It was just obscene, really. I mean, you know, when you get to the second period and Lowell is up 3-0, I figured there's no way Miami, they have no chance. You know, but then they get the first and then they get the second, and then, you know, they're getting the loose pucks and making Lowell pay, and you just kind of start to wonder, well, are we seeing a little bit of that North Dakota Minnesota thing from the Final Five starting to happen? Because it, I mean, it certainly was getting away from Lowell there in the third period. You know, and I think if that's a case where if it's you know, maybe a normal overtime, they don't resurface and send the teams.
Right.
You know, maybe Miami. Maybe Miami finishes that one off, and they
had the power play.
Yeah, they had the power play too. Right? Did they hit a crossbar then too?
Yeah, they hit a crossbar right before the game winner.
But you know what happened in the last few minutes of that game? Doug Carr.
Yeah.
After you know, I mean, some his fault and maybe some not. You know, pretty rough first half of the third period. He really impressed me. You know, he just had that extra inch of reach to get the kick save or knock the puck away, and really, you saw how special he could be in the final few minutes there. So.
Yeah, it was an odd game in the sense that I think it was really, if you were watching both teams for the first time, and I hadn't seen a lot of Lowell this season, I've seen Miami a little bit, but I think if you were watching both teams play for the first time, I think you'd have a pretty tough, if somebody asks you, you know, do you get a sense of what Miami's trying to do? Do you get a sense of what Lowell's trying to do? I think you might have a tough time describing that. It just didn't really seem like there was, and maybe I'm off base on this, but it just didn't seem like there was a great flow to that game.
I think you're right, Bus. There didn't seem to be a very good flow, but at the same time, I think that's sort of the style that Lowell likes to play. They like to have that sort of controlled chaos going on, you know, and sort of to put that sort of undue pressure on the opposition there. And that first game second game then on Friday was absolutely Lowell hockey.
See, that's interesting to me because I would think that Miami would thrive in that kind of game. And, you know, obviously in the third period they did. Yeah, Lowell is an interesting team. And they get just about everybody back, I think, next year. I think they maybe have one or two seniors, so they're going to be...
Yeah.
The future is unbelievably bright there.
Yeah.
Yeah, good deal.
And then Saturday, I mean, and again, I watched most of Saturday's game. I think Union, I thought Union really controlled that game, even though it was fairly close. I just think, you know, Lowell didn't have many quality chances.
Yeah, they got the one on the giveaway, you know, from Welsh there.
Yeah, that was about it. I mean, I think Grosnick only made 20 saves the entire night.
Yeah. 19, actually, yeah. And Carr had 35.
Yeah, so...
It was important, I think, for Union to come out on the right foot there, and they did, you know. Getting that early goal from Ciampini was a big thing for them. And what I saw maybe from Lowell, maybe I'm projecting my thoughts onto the games, but, you know, last week I talked about how important it is for teams to have been there once. And when Lowell comes out with a 3-goal lead in the third period on Friday, and then Miami scores 2 goals in 20 seconds. Now it's 3-2, you know, early third, and, you know, you gotta get it back together. But for them to survive that 5-minute penalty and then go through was great. But then Union, you know, the next night knew, like, let's take it to them. And they were great in the first period, Union was. So... they're a good team. I mean, a lot of people didn't want to believe in them because of the name on the sweaters and name on the scoreboard, but that's a good Union team.
As a friend of mine tweeted, they were loving the irony that the first time we have a Frozen Four in the Deep South, there's a team called Union coming.
We too won the war. Not,
too bad we're not going to Atlanta.
That's right.
It is too bad. Just kidding.
Yeah, at least we could see one team win a championship in Atlanta.
Wow. There we go.
Any Braves fans here? No? Okay, good.
I am. You guys know me at all? Like,
judging from the attendance at Turner Field.
I feel a haiku coming on.
If you haven't heard about the Indians winning streak, and judging by the attendance, you haven't.
They managed to string a few together.
One more hockey note, because it sounds like we're rapidly heading towards deterioration here. But
we're not even close to deterioration.
We're not even close? All right. Well, I just want to – at the risk of damaging our always friendly relationship with North Dakota fans, let me say this, friends. Your coach, Dave Haxtell, is one of the class acts in college hockey. He took – a complete mess this year and got them their third Broadmoor Trophy in a row. He has taken your team to the Frozen Four 5 times in 8 seasons. Okay? If you are one of the rubes tweeting that he should be fired, go away. Find a new hobby. You know, find something else to do with your time. Goodness sakes.
You're not figuring this one out very well.
Yeah, yeah. It's just ridiculous. All this, Haxtell can't win. He's got to go. Oh, knock it off.
Yeah, I noticed. I actually responded yesterday from the Inch account because one of our favorite Nodak tweeters, Goon.
Podcast listener.
Yeah, podcast listener, Goon48.
What's up, Goon?
He mentioned that there were people on North Dakota message boards. The Fire Haxtell threads were starting up on Sunday night. And, I mean, that's just ridiculous. And my thought at the time was, you know, North Dakota fans, you know, give us a hard time for some of the things that we say. And sure, we like to poke the stick because we know we're going to get a response. we like to poke them with the stick a little bit to, you know, elicit that reaction. But, you know, if you're one of those people that's out there saying that Dave Haxtell should be fired, then you deserve every derisive comment and every bit of the, you know, of what we send your way because you're just downright dumb.
You're ruining it for the rest of us.
Yeah,
look at that team.
It's not my fault that you're stupid.
Look at that team at the start of the season, or on August 1st, and then say, oh, by the way, we're going to take Rocco Grimaldi and JT Miller, or whatever the guy's name was, out of the mix.
And Colton St. Clair.
And, you know, and you're going to have a ton of injuries, and you're going to win.
Dell and Eisenhuis are both going to sieve out for 3 months.
Right. And you're going to win a third Broadmoor Trophy by the time it's all done and be 1 game away from the Frozen Four.
And you're going to put a forward out there who the team doesn't even know his first name.
Yeah. That's the best story. I was having a beverage with our friend Brad Schlossman before the regional, and he said, yeah, they've got a fourth line guy. They call him Jim because they don't know his real name.
At the beginning of the year, they called. I thought was one of the coaches called him Jim.
I think it was a player. I thought it was Corbin Knight or something like that.
They called him Jim. Is Dan?
Yeah.
You say his like Sinkbile.
Dan Sinkbile. Yeah.
Yeah. And now he's run out of Lamoureux. What are they going to do now?
What's the current? Never mind.
Oh, come on.
No, I was just curious. I know there's two sisters. Are they seniors or juniors or what?
I think they are seniors. They played the first year at Minnesota and then.
Well, they did.
Yeah. Yeah. They played their freshman seasons at Minnesota because, North Dakota's women's program wasn't much. Then, you know, they had a good freshman year for the Gophers. It was amazing. I did a story about their parents, you know, who have been North Dakota blood, you know, green blood runs green all their lives, and here they are down in Minneapolis wearing maroon and gold. But then they both decided to transfer to North Dakota. It worked out great because the Olympic year was the year they had to sit out.
So oh,
they
just right,
played
right.
The Olympics, and now they play for North Dakota.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're seniors, but congratulations to them, too. They made their first NCAA tournament trip on the women's side.
I give Hextall credit for that as well.
Yeah, no. Me too. Why not?
Jess, one of the...
Actually, I think he should be fired for the women's team making it.
Yeah, he should keep his job with the men, but...
Hextall didn't motivate them enough to win that first round game.
Right.
No,
there's my latest, you know, in the love in between me and North Dakota fans.
I appreciate their fanaticism.
They want the best for their team.
To a certain
extent.
They
don't know what is the best for their team.
Who are you going to get that's better than Dave Hextall?
Yeah.
Well, that guy who has 6 Frozen Fours in a row, that guy doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
Scotty Bowman will not be coaching.
Scott Bowman is not showing up.
Yeah.
I did, you know, we don't necessarily root for one team or another, but I gotta say.
Well, you do.
The way. Okay. I do have to say, you know, and it would have taken two teams winning to make this happen, but I am kind of glad we're not seeing North Dakota Boston College in the semis again. Because that could have happened, you know, with one other win. I thought, are we really going to have to go to another Frozen Four and watch that again? Just give us a new storyline.
Yeah, that would have been it would have been a good game, though.
Oh, sure it would have, but.
What?
We should.
I have no rooting interest in the Frozen Four, by the way.
This year.
This year.
Indeed. I
root for good games and no overtimes.
Yeah, I root for overtime in the early game.
No. I was going to say we should mention, I think we tweeted last night. Was it Sunday night?
Sunday night was last night as we recorded this on Monday.
This is the first time since 96 to be determined.
96, we determined it, yes.
That all four Frozen Four teams are also conference regular season champs.
Very true. I looked that up.
So when you're, you know, when it's February and March, and you're running to your computer every 45 seconds to see how, when Bentley beats AIC, how it affects the that three-letter word that I don't, that's, you know what I'm talking about.
Pairwise.
Just look at the standings.
Yeah, look at winning percentage and look at the standings.
Yeah. Or second our power year, rankings.
Second year in a row, too, we don't have a repeat team from the previous year's Frozen Four. I think that's kind of cool. Get some new teams in there.
Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't put that together.
Yeah.
Fresh set of downs.
Yeah. Indeed. Move the chains.
Move the chains.
So, moving on.
Do you think we talked about Union's games? I don't know if we talked about their team very much.
No.
Just, I think a lot of people got to see, you know what I get to see throughout the year and throughout the last couple years, and Jeremy Welsh was a really revelation this weekend, and he's an older aged junior in class rank, and a lot of people speculating that he made himself a lot of money this past weekend and the season he's had. That top line is really good. I'd give them an edge over Ferris State as it stands right now, headed into that semifinal, because of scoring depth, I think. Whereas I think Ferris relies more on that Jordy Johnston line. But Union does better at what Cornell does, I think, is kind of, you know, they have more dynamic finishers and team speed to make you know, aggressive forechecks cause turnovers, and then they have the ability to make plays when they get those turnovers. So the nation got to see that a little bit, and it's a good club.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Gladdy.
And if you read Gladdy's writing, you would have known that a year and a half ago.
Well,
I read it. I just didn't believe it. Now I believe. You were right.
Thanks, Jess.
You have a convert.
18 months later.
Let's not get into that with Jess. Recognizing people. How many months later?
Oh, yeah. Boom.
Nice. I told Gladdy this off air, Kevin. I distinctly remember talking to Cornell's SID. If you would have paid me $1,000 to remember his name, wasn't going to happen. No, I'm just glad to know it was you.
Oh, man.
Seeing some, like, sappy movie scene of Jess and Kevin running toward each other in slow motion at the
on a beach.
In a field.
We'll reenact that in Florida.
Poppies. Running down the hill like in Little House on the Prairie. Holding hands.
So. Wait, you told me nobody was taping that.
So. We'll clean it up in post.
So we got that.
Glad he wants to talk about his favorite subjects. TV and attendance.
I was going to say, where's Matt Molson fitting into this? And his Islanders.
Matt Molson, mention 34 goals now, fellas. 34.
So if you had 58 minutes in the podcast for when Glad he was going to mention Matt Molson, you're a winner.
You hit it right on the number. You want to get into the attendance and TV thing? I mean, we can let's go there.
I understand the frustrations of people and when games aren't on TV. And I mean, I was one of the people that got, you know, caught with this a little bit too, because all of a sudden I'm, you know, it's whatever time, noon or 1:30 on Saturday afternoon, and I turn on the TV to go and watch the North Dakota game, and it's not on, or it wasn't on Fox Sports North plus squared times two Telstar one or whatever it was supposed to be on. But you know, there was a time when people. One thing that really bugged me was complaining about the announcers and, you know, some of the broadcast teams and stuff like that. And, you know, I understand that, you know, do your homework and that type of thing, you know. But I think the reality is that, you know, there was a time not that long ago where we didn't see any of these games. You know, to see them, you had to have a real satellite dish. Or you had to go to a bar that had a real satellite dish and bribe the bartender to turn one of the 80 TVs that was showing the NCAA basketball
game, yeah,
to you know, to a hockey game. So, you know, some of the complaints, I think, you know, I understand where they're coming from, and I appreciate that, you know, college hockey fans want what their sport represented in the best light, but. You know, you have to remember, A, where this game was not that long ago. You know, we all can remember where you couldn't find every game on TV or on...
online, yeah.
Or online.
I thought the ESPN3 feeds were great. I mean, I had a great connection and,
well, you know,
great picture quality.
You know, and we're at the point in time where...
Yeah, get used to it.
Yeah, this is the way it's going to be, where everything's going to be online and you're going to watch it on your TV.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing... too is that you have to recognize that, you know, ESPN's not in the business of making you happy.
Yeah.
And ESPN2 and ESPNU, they're in the business of making money. And the reality of it is that, you know, they could, if they wanted, they could make more money showing World Series of Poker reruns not sending a crew to Green Bay, not sending a crew to broadcast live from Worcester and Bridgeport and these places. You know, I think that there's a certain segment, and I think the internet, obviously, and Twitter make people...
Gives them a voice.
Gives them a voice and maybe makes it, kind of emboldens them a lot. You know, there's a lot of tough guys on the internet and on Twitter, but, I mean, things could be a lot worse. You know, it's when we're talking about hockey on TV, we're in the golden age of college hockey on TV. So.
Yeah, one point that is valid, and it's funny because it mirrors where hockey stands relative to the rest of the sports in the NCAA hierarchy. It's so different. Everything is different about hockey. And when it's lumped in with ESPN, ESPN and ABC in their production and programming, you know, baseball is nationwide. Lacrosse is growing far faster, whereas hockey is, you could almost say, is shrinking. Women's sports are becoming far more popular. Women's basketball, softball, those are big time deals there. So you've got to realize that ESPN's a little hamstrung because they buy, you know, they buy the whole thing. They can't parse out, you know, oh, you can have soccer on soccer channel and you can have hockey on hockey channel and all that stuff. So, I mean, that's just how it goes. And the regular season coverage is unbelievable. I mean, how many Friday nights were there this year where you could watch seven games?
Many.
A lot of them. So, yeah, the games were on. And you know what? If you're that invested, you can find a way to see it. Well,
How about going to the rink?
Yeah, that brings us to a nice point.
Yeah, there's the transition.
Good segue.
There's a segue, Dowd.
All right, you know, it's maybe a sore spot for me because I've been in some pretty barren rinks, and Kevin, I know you were in Grand Rapids with me a few years ago. I was in St. Louis last year, and I've been in some pretty empty rinks and situations where you said, okay, I can understand. I was in Worcester. I stayed in Boston. One night I drove from Boston to Worcester. One night I took the train from Boston to Worcester. Chestnut Hill and Kelly Rink are closer to Worcester than Boston. And yet, you know, the BC students, the ones who were there, they're passionate, they're loud. There weren't that many of them. BC fans, you know, it's like if you're not going to show up when, you know, it's less than an hour drive or an hour train ride away, I don't know, you kind of lose your right to complain about it. I can understand not that many Minnesota Duluth fans being there, and I'll give respect to the main ones that showed up, but, you know, it's not like these were huge numbers. That's something like a 10,000-seat rink, and it was nothing like full. And, you know, frankly, I guess I don't know what the solution is, but I really don't have much room to listen to people's whining about games on TV when...
I got a solution.
What's your solution?
Speak. Then? Don't charge $64 a ticket.
Bingo.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
That's just a ridiculous price.
Can I chime in with one other thing?
Absolutely.
Selections are made on Sunday. These games are being played on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
It is next to impossible to find, especially if you have to travel more than driving distance, but it is almost impossible to find airfare or anything of that nature to be able to get someplace without spending an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
If there is some possible way to build in some more time between the selections and allowing people to make some arrangements that aren't going to make them take out a second mortgage on top of the price of the tickets.
Yeah. And you've probably, if you're that big a fan, you've probably just gotten back from your league tournament.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, I think that's one big thing, especially, you know, you think about North Dakota. You were just in St. Paul for probably 4 days the previous week.
Yeah, right.
And then
three games.
And then you come back, you get back home on a Sunday, and you find out, well, I guess, you know, if we want to go, we got to turn around and go back, you know, go back to St. Paul for another, you know, for another two games, and it's, you know, and it's not a cheap ticket, obviously. You know, I think that that's kind of one thing that it just didn't watch. It was interesting to watch Twitter as these games were going on, you know, sitting at home and watching the games and seeing what people were saying. It's just it seemed to be a little bit of a common theme of the ticket prices are just way out of whack. And I think, you know, I think you can solve a lot of problems by lowering the ticket prices.
Well,
but again, that's the NCAA's realm, and
I don't know that changes much. What do you attract? Let's say, you know,
I think you're more apt to get maybe a casual fan.
But that's what I'm saying. How many of those families are in, you know, Green Bay, Appleton, Milwaukee?
Well, I think that
area, you know, that you're going to
you look at Green Bay. You know, you've got the gamblers there who I think do pretty well. At least they have in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if it's more enticing for the
but then you're drawing. Let's say you draw 100 families. There's 400 more people in the rink.
Yeah.
You know, who don't have a rooting interest, so that's not going to change the atmosphere. You know, you'll sell some extra hot dogs and popcorn, I'm sure, but, you know.
But they're not also the passionate fans that have a rooting interest with one team or another.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not necessarily going to be vocal. They're not going to be doing some of the cheers. You know, they're not going to be into the game as much as the passionate, hardcore fans are.
Well, I think that then if that's the argument, what you're coming down to is this, you know, is this tournament just for the passionate fans, or are you hoping to, you know, maybe expose some more people to the game, and it, you know, maybe down the road somebody likes what they see and, you know, we'll go drive over to Wisconsin and catch the Badgers, or
right,
you know, some, or we'll, you know, next year, hey, it's next year's not a very good example because the West region or the Midwest and West are in Grand Rapids and Toledo. You know, if somebody likes what they saw in Green Bay, maybe next year they go to St. Paul or they go to,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just throwing that out there. I think that there are a lot of problems. I mean, probably one of the big ones is Green Bay's pretty darn hard to get to, for an example.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, here's the biggest. Here I go. You ready, guys? You guys ready? Do you have your seatbelts on? Here's the biggest problem to me, is the people think it matters.
No. Yeah.
Like, you're sitting there watching the game on TV complaining about going to the game. Well, then go to the game and bring a friend. You know? That's one. Number two, I've never seen the crowd win a face-off. Like, the guys are playing for championships. That's great. Let them battle. I mean, that Ferris-Cornell game was one of the hardest competing games I've seen all season, as far as two teams really battling it out. Did it matter that there were nobody there or a full house? No. So.
I will also add one nice thing about it. I know, talking to the Cornell folks, their trip to Green Bay included a tour of Lambeau Field, you know, and that's, you know, getting into the locker room and getting onto the field. Those are experiences that those kids are going to remember for the rest of their lives, you know, and it's not something that they would have gotten if, you know, you're playing on campus sites or you're doing, you know, it's a very different sort of experience that is something that is very beneficial for a lot of these kids to experience something cool like that.
Yeah, you know, I don't. My issue with the atmosphere in the rinks is less about the kids. I agree. Them making the NCAA tournament, the experiences they have surrounding it, are the things they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. But when you look at growing the profile of college hockey, when you think about what it will look like on television, you know, think about a game at Yost or a game that's full at Mariucci or a game that's full at BC or Maine or at Lina at Cornell. I guess that to me, would be part of the draw for a casual fan. They come in and they say, oh, this is fun. You know, there's a lot of energy in this building. There's a lot of positive or, you know, maybe negative, you know, but fun negative, you know, against the atmosphere, against the opponents. Like, it's a fun place to be, and that's kind of what can draw people into the college game. Because it's not as fast as the NHL. It's not a, you know, it's not as polished as the NHL because it's a developmental league. But what it has over maybe junior hockey and AHL hockey is that collegiate atmosphere. And that's what the regionals kind of lack to me, that even like the CCHA final at Joe Louis, the final weekend, had, because all four teams were able to bring their bands, and because Bowling Green is pretty close by, and because it's still a novelty for Western Michigan, and Michigan always draws there. There was a manageable number of fans.
Yeah, but it was fewer than a regular season Michigan State Michigan game in the same building.
Yes, true. So
the problem in St. Paul with the crowd, not that it wasn't a good crowd. I mean, you know, the Sunday game had something like 11,000 people there. Which, by all accounts, is a pretty good crowd. The problem was, 1 week earlier, the same two teams had played in a near full building with an incredible atmosphere, and it just was less. I mean, it was not the same, not as good.
Well, and the tickets were half as much.
Right.
Maybe.
And to the WCHA's credit, you know, they have, Bruce McLeod boasts about this, they have something like 11,000 season ticket holders for the Final Five. You know, 11,000 people that buy tickets for every game every year, regardless of who's playing. So you're starting from a pretty solid base.
All yeah, right. Well, they also buy tickets to watch a bunch of high school kids play, too.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Buzz.
No, I think I was going to say, I think the ticket for that semifinal, I remember looking at the pricing structure for that game, might have been like $35 or something like that for that WCHA game.
Yep.
But you know, the advantage you're always going to have with the league tournament is you know when it's going to be and you know where it's going to be, and you can plan to go whether your team's there or not.
Yep. Right.
You know.
And there's a 50% chance your team is going to be there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. My brother-in-law went to Western Michigan and I went to Miami, so if we if our teams go, we'll get the tickets and I'm sure one of us will be able to make it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. How many of those situations do you get too? So.
So what's the answer? I mean, do you truly
the answer is stop complaining or buy a ticket? That's my answer.
But you know, you mentioned the travel part of it, and I you know I've been covering these a lot of years. It's a lot better than it used to be. You know, number one, I think there are more flights to places. And number two, you know, now with the Frozen Four doing that 1 week break, you have more time to travel plan.
Well, but I think the Frozen Four, I mean, at least people go regardless of who's playing it.
Sure.
And, you know, you're going to have people who go just because that's their big trip for the year.
You don't have fans that just go to the Midwest Regional every year, no matter where it is, no matter who's in it.
This is funny because I'm a season ticket holder, or I get Frozen Four tickets every year, and I have for probably, I don't know, 10, 11 years now. And my wife and I were just talking about this the other day. She's like, why do you get tickets? I said, well, I suppose there's going to come a time where we won't be working the website, or we'll have to turn it over to somebody else to do it, somebody better and smarter. And, you know, I want to go. And she said, well, what if it's someplace you don't want to go? I'm like, well, you're missing the point. I'm not going to the city.
Yeah, I'm not going to the place. Yeah.
I'm going to the hockey game that just happens to be in
right.
City X and City Y. And that's, I think that's the difference between the Frozen Four and the regionals, where, you know, I'd love to go see Western Michigan, but they're in St. Paul, and that's hard to get to, and so on and so forth.
What would your thoughts be? We'll go right around. Dowd, we'll start with you. What if they went baseball style and just had them in the same place every year?
You okay with that?
I mean, Omaha's a destination, and that draws, you know, for the same reason. You know, it draws the fan, the college baseball fan, and they go and they party. And, you know, like hockey, you know, you get a lot of repeat teams at that thing every year. You know, you're going to see LSU. You're going to see Cal State Fullerton. You're going to see Florida, you know, whoever it might be. And they can go. And then, you know, if your team makes it in and you're not the every year team, you know, you can find a way to go. But they know they're going to Omaha. What if, you know, what if it was one site or two sites? I mean, just call it the easy ones and say, you know, St. Paul, Boston, St. Paul, Boston. Just flip them back and forth.
You're talking about for the
Frozen.
The Frozen, yeah. I mean, I'm okay with that.
What if you did that for regionals?
I'd be okay with that, too. You know, especially I think with the way college hockey breaks out geographically, you could probably find a sensible place to, you know, to have it. And maybe that generates more interest from the casual fan who, you know, say you were playing at Joe Louis in Detroit and somebody went down there and said, hey, this is fun to see, you know, to see Union get through to the Frozen Four. I kind of like that. Not, you know, say that Union, that regional had been played in Detroit. And so then next year they go, and maybe Michigan's not going to be there, but, you know, they know there's a storyline to watch, or they, you know, they can go year in and year out, and they kind of get hooked in a little bit more to some of the drama and some of the things, and frankly, the good hockey that you get.
Yeah.
So I could deal with it being the regionals being the same place.
Jess?
I don't like it. Move it around.
Alright.
I just think, you know, you add something. Even if it's, you know, it's the guy who went to his first college hockey game in St. Louis last year. Yeah, I like that part of it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's pros and cons to both sides.
You know, I do think, I wrote about this a little this weekend, but I do think we are seeing an effect 12 years later or whatever of having the Frozen Four in Anaheim. I mean, you talk to some of these California kids that are playing college hockey now, and they said that was their first exposure to the game, and that really meant something to them. Hopefully, 12 years from now, when somebody better is running this website, as Boss alluded to, they'll be talking about the Florida effect.
Yeah, definitely someone better than Boss.
Wow.
And so they're going to be talking about the Ford Field Frozen Four?
Absolutely. You know, all those inner-city Detroit kids who picked up the game for the first time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Gladdy, what about a model more? I know I like to bag in lacrosse a little bit, but what about a model more like what lacrosse does?
You know, I'm thinking one Eastern and one Western site. Your first eight games are on campus sites, and then you have double headers at an Eastern space and a Western space for your Frozen Four teams.
I wouldn't even go that far. I would say do your Friday, Saturday, Sunday thing, but have, you know, two games Friday, two games Saturday, or two games Sunday. You know, have your championship games both on Sunday.
2-3-2?
No, I would do 2-2, or 2-2-2. Two semifinals for one region on Friday, two semifinals for the other region on Saturday, two finals on Sunday.
So someone gets a day off in there.
Yeah. Two teams would get a day off.
Well, I think you go two.
But they're playing each other. So it's not as though they're getting a benefit by having that extra day or anything like that.
Yeah, there'd be lobbying involved with that. It wouldn't matter to us, but that's not going to pass 58 coaches, you know.
No. Nothing, suggestions will pass 58 coaches.
Go ahead, Jess.
Since we brought up lacrosse, how about this idea that lacrosse does? You have the Thursday semifinals at the Frozen Four.
Okay.
On Friday, you have the Division III championship and the women's championship. And on Saturday, you have the men's championship.
It doesn't work for calendars.
Okay.
Women in D3 are already 2 weeks done, and now you're going to add three more weeks which means they have to start practicing later and start playing later because their rules are different.
Okay. I do like that lacrosse does that, that they have all of their, you know, their three championship games all in one weekend, all in one place. I mean, make it a true celebration of the sport.
Yeah. And that's actually just the men's championships, Jess. They played two and three, yeah, not women's.
You're right. Yep.
But, no, that's a valid point. Kevin, I think I'd go with it if you went with the 2-3-2 format.
It'd be 2-3-1 then.
Well, that's true, 2-3-1. Even that.
You know, either way, that way you have you're cutting down on the possible sites for a team. So if you're Maine this year, you know your odds of being in the Eastern site now. You know exactly what the Eastern site is going to be, as opposed to gambling. Am I going to Bridgeport or am I going to Worcester?
Yeah, yeah. You're going to Manchester. You're going to Grand Rapids. Figure it out. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What do you guys think about a 2-3-1? And then you're drawing four teams. So everybody brings 2,500 fans like they did this past weekend. That's 10,000 right there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's I like that solution. You know, and the other thing that I think we've talked about in the past and we don't know about the logistically how it would work is that, you know, we talked about, you know, how do you ensure that the top seeds get through? And I think at one time we were throwing around, well, maybe you play a best of three on campuses.
Yeah.
For that first, you know, to narrow the field of 16 down to 8, and then you play down the 8 to 4.
Yeah, one doubleheader, yeah.
Yeah. So, that would be the only scenario where I'd like to see a move back to campus sites, I think.
Is a three-game series?
Yeah, like an opening round series type thing like that. I don't want to see an entire region go back to campus sites.
Right.
I mean, I think what's unfortunate about that is that there are campus sites where arenas are better fits maybe for the tournament than some of the buildings that they're in now.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, what happens if they host one at Yost and Michigan's not in it? You know, like, if, you know, right now the way it is, you go to the regional that you host, you know, but say Michigan didn't make the tournament that year.
Yeah.
You know, do you think people are going to go watch, you know, Bowling Green and Minnesota Duluth and...
How about make an incentive in it, though? I mean, if you win your conference's regular season championship, you will host a regional in your building.
Oh, that's not going to work.
Really? Because then fans have, you know, a couple weeks to prepare.
Well, what about the arenas, Jess? Yeah. Wisconsin can't get their own rink because of high school tennis or something, and Ohio State can't get theirs.
Yeah, and I suppose if you're at Ferris where you have, you know, 2,000 seats.
Yeah, what are you gonna tell?
Yeah,
you're gonna tell the North Dakota folks that they're gonna get 50 tickets for Ferris.
Yeah.
although you know what,
Union's the number one seed. Have you been to their rink?
Not recently.
I'd rather have 2,500 tickets that are in demand than 15,000 that nobody wants.
Yeah.
That's just me.
But if there were 1,500 tickets, man, they'd have to charge like $250 a ticket then. By NCAA standards.
Yeah. Right. Well, no solutions, but worth bringing up.
Maybe they should expand the tournament so we have to play at more different places.
No.
Can we add a first four?
No.
Can we add some play-in games?
We'll have those on the Tuesday before we start playing the real games.
Yeah. Does Dayton have a rink?
Yeah, they do.
Yes, they do. The Nutter Center.
Home of the Dayton Bombers?
Nutter.
Wright State Arena, or Wright State University's rink. Arena.
Michigan played down there one year.
Oh, that's right. Miami had the Lefty McFadden tournament there.
That's what it was, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Nutter Center? Is what it's called?
Yes, the Nutter Center.
No. Did Maine ever play there?
No jokes.
Hey, now.
Maine never had to send a beat writer down to the Nutter Center for any hockey.
Should I get back on my soapbox a little bit here?
Please do.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
The four teams that are at the Frozen Four are Union, Ferris State, Minnesota, and Boston College.
Well, you really know how to take a stand.
I'm very adamant about that.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with Dartmouth, Princeton, Merrimack, UNH, Mankato, CC, you know, Lake Superior State, Bowling Green, Michigan, Miami, whoever. They're just teams. They're not leagues. The end. I've been on that for a while, and I just wanted to say it again on the podcast.
We talked about this prior to starting the recording, and you know, there's no football fan. There's no Colts fan that roots for the, you know, well, Colts didn't make the playoff. I guess I'll root for the NFC South or AFC South, I should say.
Well, I think there is some of that, but
I was going to say, I mean, you can't tell me that there weren't Michigan fans who's were, you know, having a good laugh at or supporting Ohio University. I have to clear that up, obviously. Yes, you know, against North Carolina on Friday night, you know, when they were in there, you know, I'm sure Michigan fans got some joy out of that, like that, you know.
That's a little different.
That's way different. If that's Ohio State playing North Carolina, Michigan fans want to see Ohio State lose by 200 points.
You know, if your team's not involved, you have to have something to cheer for. I understand that, but
okay, all right. I thought you were getting on people for that too, and I was like, well, yeah,
No,
you want to pick on yours. I mean, there's only two teams in the Super Bowl. That doesn't mean the other 28 fan bases can't watch. You know, that's not what I'm saying. Or 30, I guess they got.
But for the record, when the Packers were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, I didn't root for them because I'm an NFC North fan.
Yeah, there
exactly.
You go.
So you rooted for him because he had money on him?
No. I rooted for their bus to crash en route to the stadium.
I rooted for him because my wife's a Packer fan. It makes things a lot easier.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good planning, Bus.
I know.
I can see that.
I
rooted for the other team because their quarterback went to a hockey school.
It was mentioned that, I'm a Braves fan. No kidding. I don't care at all. In fact, I care very much that the Phillies and Mets never win.
Yeah.
I'm not cheering for NL East.
As it should be.
Yeah, so I don't know.
And there's not a comparison really for the Twins right now because they play in such a milquetoast division.
There's a comparison for
But back in the day when they were in the AL West and they were, you know, it was them and Oakland, I would rather see Oakland get hit by a meteor than win a World Series.
Yeah. And, you know, and you're going
to see... A lot of Oakland right actually looks like it did get hit by a meteor. I don't know if you've been there, but...
I've been to Detroit.
It's Detroit with palm trees.
The meteor was coming into Detroit, and it said, what's the use? It's like putting lipstick on a pig.
There was a throwaway line on 30 Rock, maybe last year, saying... In other weather news, a tornado struck downtown Detroit, putting out several fires.
Anyway, back to your point.
Well, it's not much of a point. It's just an annoyance.
But then again, it's not much of a podcast, so.
So your point is that you don't cheer for your rivals just because they're from your league?
No, the point is...
If there's going to be a lot of North Dakota fans, I think... Who will prefer if Minnesota wins the whole thing? Maybe I don't know.
Do they prefer that because they lost to North Dakota and then they can say, "Oh, we got knocked out by the national champion"?
Yeah, there might be some of that, but at the same
and
time,
they just want to. I don't know. Maybe it's different with that league, but
I think it's
big picture in the Minneapolis paper today of Travis Boyd celebrating scoring his first goal of the season against North Dakota. And you can see the crowd behind him, and it's all a lot of Gopher fans standing cheering. And in the midst of them are two fans in Bulldog jerseys, clearly standing and applauding for the Gophers. So
it happens.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, well. if Ferris State had played Minnesota Duluth, that would have been very confusing for the casual college hockey observer.
It would have been an inter-squad scrimmage.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, now this team is – with that team is – yeah. So. Anything else, fellas? Hockey and or deterioration?
Yeah, one thing. This will bridge it.
Okay.
I mentioned I saw a lot of Twitter over the weekend.
Yep.
And I don't spend a lot of time on Twitter. I probably should tweet more, because I have a lot of smart things to say and insightful.
I don't think you should tweet more.
And to keep Jess in line.
Every tweet you had this weekend was ripping on me, Chirpy.
Well, that's because, first of all, Jess is like, do you think, he's like, it's the second period.
Oh, now we get to rehash it, too.
It's the second period of Minnesota, North Dakota, and he's like, do you think if the Gophers are in the locker room listening to Jimmy Buffett, that's rubbing it in or being premature or what? I don't remember the exact quote.
A little arrogant, like, if they're listening to Florida Days by Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, Florida Days. Yeah. I'm like, no, they're listening to Flo Rida if they're listening to anything about Florida. Not Jimmy Buffett. Quaker Oat Man.
So that's what you wanted to reiterate?
No, I want to reiterate. I just had that.
Buffett is a little more up on pop culture music than the rest of us.
Those tweets were directed at Jess because...
Because he does
things like take a healthy scratch in the last round of our fantasy NCAA draft, but that's neither here nor there.
Was he a healthy scratch?
Yeah,
your guy didn't play.
Was he really?
Yeah, both nights.
Oh my goodness.
We're not gonna name names, but
I was gonna go back and check the box score to see if he did anything. Well,
nope.
Thanks for spoiling that. we won't name names, but
he was sitting next to Down. He got an assist getting Down a cup of coffee.
Can I look at your line chart for a second?
Wait, I'm not on here.
No. I got traded.
In a nice suit.
at least if you took Aaron Crandall, you would have had a chance. he was dressed.
We opened a door.
Yeah.
Ironically, he was listening to Jimmy Buffett in the locker room.
It comes full circle. No, the point I was going to make is there sure are a lot of people tweeting worthless crap. I mean...
That's, so you want to tweet on our staff?
No, our staff shows some. I would like to say that we show incredible restraint. You know, I remember Dowd tweeting more observation type things from Worcester and from the Joe last year or last weekend. Stuff like that. That's the kind of stuff I want to hear. You know, tell me something I can't see on TV. Don't tell me. You know,
power play.
North Dakota power play over. Yeah. Offsides Boston College. I mean, what does that add?
Yeah.
You know.
And then, you know,
save the ones. Save
end
the
of
ones.
One period.
Yeah.
1-1. Oh, thanks.
Say 4 minutes left in the third period. You know, say. If I can see it in front of me on TV, it doesn't.
I want so badly to name names right now.
Well, I do too.
You know what? I'll tell you, this is even worse.
Email us off the air, and we'll no.
Well, I'll tell you, and I'll name names. I was in the car, had about an hour and a half drive during the Union Lowell game, and I was interested in the result as a college hockey writer. And what was going on. I follow Union's beat writer, Union's SID, and a Union blog. And, you know, you shouldn't read Twitter while you're driving. It's a bad thing. But I want the score of the game.
Disclaimer.
So I'm looking at their tweets and I'm seeing all this stuff and no score. And it's like 15 tweets deep. I'm like, what the hell is going on in this game?
Yeah.
Put the score in. That's all.
Tweet the score.
Yeah.
If you're gonna, no, if you're gonna send,
you're gonna make an 80 character tweet saying penalty to John Doe for tripping, then just put to one union, 15 minutes left, you know? Anyway.
Yes.
Put the score.
Twitter is not play-by-play, folks.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah, that...
Start a cover it live chat. And a lot of schools do that and do a great job with it. And that's a far better forum for that kind of thing.
North Dakota does a fantastic job of that.
Yeah.
Hajdu and Brad Schlossman. I mean, that's if you can't get to a TV and you want to follow the game, do it that way.
Yeah.
Don't do it at Twitter.
Yep.
And likewise, if you think you're adding something to the conversation by tweeting, you know, Offsides Maine, you're not.
Yeah.
You're not.
Now, if you're tweeting something about the linesman's mother for calling them offsides, that's adding something.
Right.
So, there you go.
Actually, the best thing to do, just run it by us.
Yeah, just check in with us.
And if we give you the thumbs up...
We have a 48-hour turnaround time.
Yeah.
We promise we'll get back to you and approve or disapprove your tweet.
Here's another one I'd like to throw in there, because I saw this, too, from a prolific tweeter. Don't be tweeting about the hockey and then just throw in something about the weather. Or...
I disagree with that.
They're just something, making sure you're paying attention.
Or something, no, or something about an event that is not, you know, I'm talking about tweeting during a hockey game and then all of a sudden just throwing in something that is so completely off base it's not even in the same solar system.
Nah, I don't have.
I don't know. It depends.
I have a huge problem with that because you're tweeting to a hockey audience and then all of a sudden you're like, tweeting about deaf poetry jam or whatever the hell it is.
That's not necessarily true. I mean,
it's 100% true. You're wrong.
I mean, I have a very varied amount of interests. I have several followers who follow me because I'm a Braves fan, and several because I'm a hockey writer, and several that are people I know, you know. So they know what they're getting from me. And that doesn't mean I can only do one thing.
But I'm saying if you're at a hockey game and you're tweeting about a hockey game for, you know, 2.5 periods, and then all of a sudden you throw in something about, I sure do hope the Braves win the World Series this year. Well, that's kind of out of left field, isn't it?
No pun intended.
Just saying, let's have some focus here, people.
Well, what about the special circumstance when I was at a college hockey rink and I found out that Whitney Houston had passed away? See?
You are not allowed to do that according to the rules of bus.
No.
She meant a lot in my life.
No, she didn't. Pretty
you
sure.
You were personally?
No. But, whatever.
Glad he believes that children are our future.
I am the future. So.
Just think about it.
Use discretion.
And if you have to ask yourself, am I adding anything? Is this something people would be interested in? It's not.
Are you doing it? You know, I've heard Twitter described as a conversation. And that's... I like going by that rule of thumb. If you're at a game sitting next to someone who's interested in the game, do you tell them the score? Like, do you read the scoreboard to them?
Do you tell them,
hey,
offsides?
That guy just got a penalty. Yeah.
You know, that person
say, wow, that third line looks really good tonight. There you go.
to me, I'd like to see, you know, like following, you know, Ferris State hockey or Michigan hockey or North Dakota hockey, and they tell us what's going on. Here's what the score is. Here's what that. Like, you look to other people, like you're saying, you wouldn't, you know, I'm not sitting next to Nate Yule in the press box and saying, oh, Nate, by the way, it's, you know, 1-0 Maine, and I think this, you know. But it depends on what you want. There's, like, certain people where they should be giving, you know, play-by-play, and that's what the account is designed to do, and most of the rest of the people, I don't think need to do that. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, I would go to certain sources, like an official source, to check a score. You know, like you go to the college hockey score or something like that. I wouldn't go to...
Or, like, you know, North Dakota hockey will tweet more of a play-by-play account. Fine, right. That's understandable because...
No, people... I like that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I expect from them, but I don't expect...
500 you know, people say...
Offsides.
Yeah. Big save by goalie. Thanks,
guys. I mean, that isn't just a hockey problem, though. I mean, like,
being a
Michigan guy and seeing, like, Michigan basketball games are just atrocious on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, I got to, while we're on the topic of etiquette here, I'll send a shout-out to two people who I think do it right. First of all, the Syracuse newspaper, Post Standard, has an account for coverage of Syracuse lacrosse, and their lacrosse writer is terrific and a good guy, Dave Ramey. He puts a score at the end of every single one of his tweets, and it's just awesome. The other one is Binghamton Senators beat writer has a Twitter account for articles and observations, and then has a game updates one. So if you just want score updates, you follow that one, and you get all those annoying, you know, power play over, sends now 1-for-3, you know, whatever. Get all that stuff. But it doesn't clutter up your regular, like, you know, your regular coverage during the week. So I think those are two very good ideas.
I like that. That's kind of what I was getting at before. You know, like, you know, make your account about play-by-play or make your account about commentary, not.
Right. All right.
I still hate you all.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about tweeting,
don't
get off my lawn. Did you ever see Gran Torino?
No.
Oh. Want to do the way too early predictions thing? Wrap it up with that, or no?
It's never too early.
Okay.
I predict that. On December 1st next year, Team Y will be first in the pairwise.
There you go. Jess, what do you think?
I'm still trying to figure out that healthy scratch. Man, that one really got me. Oh, wow. Okay. What am I being asked to comment on? Oh, my predictions for the Frozen Four?
Yeah.
Oh wait, we've got some breaking news on your healthy scrat.
Be gone.
Oh
right.
Wow.
Okay.
I'm on Gladys' team. I'm a believer in Union. I think they're gonna win that first game. I think Boston College is real, real good. As good as the Gophers have been this season, I think they're overmatched in that second game, so BC Union final, and I can't pick against Jerry York in the Frozen Four.
That's fair. Doubt?
I agree with that pick, and with one caveat. I think if Ferris State finds a way past Union, they're a better matchup for Boston College. I saw what Air Force did to Boston College, and I think Ferris can do the same thing, but a little better. So.
Kyle Rao, by the way, will be the first player to score a goal against BC in this tournament.
He's got it going right now.
He's just so nasty around the blue paint.
Who did I pick?
Yeah.
BC, but I...
BC over Union, but if it's Ferris, it's a closer game.
Well,
I think Union will be... what I'm saying is I think Union will beat Ferris, but I think Ferris would be a better matchup for Boston College. But since I think Union will win, I think that BC will win the whole thing. Do you follow that?
Do you even listen to yourself when you talk?
Boss?
I'm going to go tweet.
Tweet this.
All right, Bus. What's your call here?
I would say BC's to lose, but man, Minnesota looked so good yesterday, or Sunday, I should say, against North Dakota. I'm gonna say Minnesota gets past BC. I like Union against Ferris State. I think that's going to be a really good game. But I think Union, you know, I like their depth a little bit better. So that leads to a Union Minnesota final. I hate to pick against my Dutch. So I won't. Union, you're national champs. World All champions right. of the world, Union.
There you go. And then Kevin?
I too like BC to get past Minnesota. I'm gonna be the outlier and I'm gonna go with Ferris over Union. I saw an awful lot of Cornell in Ferris. And I think Cornell's probably the one team that, that really gave Union some troubles this year.
Good call.
So I do like Ferris to beat them, but I just see too much of the juggernaut that is BC. So BC over Ferris in the title game.
All right. Everyone went, right? That just leaves me.
That's
it. Are we holding – these are in cement now, right?
Unless we find out one of the players is a healthy scratch, then you can change your mind. Here's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Brendan Morrison. I'm thinking of last year's North Dakota team. You know, there are some exceptions, like 2010 Boston College. But the best team doesn't always win. And sometimes it's that team that just has it. And right now I think Minnesota has it. What they've done at the regionals, just overwhelmingly impressive to me. I think they win the whole thing. They've got it going right now. And I'm just going on that hunch. You know, they can put it together, play that one great game and we'll see what happens. But, I'm going with the Gophers to win it all. And I like Union over Ferris State. So that's my call.
All right. So we had what? Couple
BC, couple Minnesota. No. One Minnesota, one Union. Two
BC.
We
got five of us. We got a Union, a Gophers, and three BC.
No Ferris.
No Ferris.
Hey, womp, womp. At least one of us was able to pick Ferris for the title game.
Yeah, we also had no Ferris in our regional predictions. So.
Yeah, and we got an email.
Did we?
Yeah. No, it was a Facebook post.
Ah.
Dowd, you're gonna love this. We got a Facebook
post. Is it from Northern Michigan? Please tell
me. No, it was from Ferris. You guys are idiots. You didn't pick Ferris. You know, disrespect, blah, blah, this, that. Nobody gives Ferris their respect. And I'm like, while I'm reading this.
You should say that.
While I'm reading this, I'm like, nobody has given Ferris more respect over this season than you since day one, since before the season started when you kind of caught on to it. We were actually talking about this earlier today. In A to Z, you were talking to Bob Daniels and, you know, even then he hinted at, I think this team is going to be a little bit different this year. So
I just pulled up this post.
Yeah.
Way to blow your power rankings inside college hockey in favor of Hockey East, ECAC, and WCHA teams. Let's see. Was Ferris State number one in the other polls or the power rankings first? Oh, yeah. The power rankings.
Yeah, so this dude needs to look at the game tape.
Yeah. I'm gonna say that now, and I'll put it out there. I'm not saying that I ever predicted that Ferris State would be in the Frozen Four, but I don't think Ferris State ever predicted they'd be in the Frozen Four either. Well, what you're referencing is since the beginning of this year, when I talked to Bob Daniels back in August or September, and he said, there's something different about this team. I think they're going to be able to score enough. And he wasn't saying they're going to score 5 goals a game or do what Boston College has done over the last 4 months, but he said, in the past, we're always good at defense, we've always got good goaltending, but we don't have that it to get, you know, to get that goal when you need it, that goal to put it ahead, that goal they got late in the third period after Cornell tied it. They've got the ability to do that this year. And he said that back in the summer. And I wrote about it then, and I wrote about it in October. I wrote about it in January. I wrote about it again in February as they were trying to close out the league title, talked to Jordy Johnson a couple months ago, and what he said was I asked him, what's different about this team than the team you played on with Blair Riley a couple of years ago? If you guys remember, they had a team that fell just short of the NCAA tournament, but they had a top line then that was one of the best in the country that year. And he said, we've got more depth, we've gotten more balance, and maybe we don't have that one line that's going to go out and do it, but we've got more than one line that can get a goal when we need it. So, yeah, I didn't predict Ferris in the Frozen Four. No, I didn't take them in my regional picks, and I stand by the reasoning for that. But, I've been trying to say since the beginning of this year that this was had the potential to be a special Ferris team by Ferris standards, and now it's a special team by national standards.
Glady, you've talked before about, the folly of ripping people for their picks after the fact. Let's just wait till the game's played and then pick it, because then we'd be more accurate.
Yeah.
My favorite thing that way is I can't even remember what fan base it was. I could make an assumption that it was one we've already mentioned, but I got chirped from somebody afterwards because I had picked their team to not win something and they had won, saying, I look forward to you printing a retraction. Oh, yeah. I'll go back and redo all my picks after the fact and make apologies.
Yeah. And you know what, Ferris State fan? Great season. Enjoy it. Celebrate it. But there's a reason if you're claiming we didn't respect your team. It's because they lost to the last place team at home in a 3-game series. What kind of confidence should we have in that team? A team that staggered through the end of the regular season and barely hung on because of a bonus point.
Well, and that's the other point that this guy made. I'm assuming it was a guy. I didn't read it that closely.
It was a guy.
Yeah, I usually skip the name and just go
right to the blathering.
Right to the gist of it. And he's like, oh, by the way, Union. You know, we mentioned Union kind of, or Union. We mentioned Ferris State kind of backdooring their way to the regular season title. They tied. They won it on a tie and a shootout win in the CCHA. The bottom line is they controlled their own destiny, and they they ended up winning it in the least decisive way possible.
Yeah, and they still could have been tied, right?
Because yeah, they still could have, but Michigan lost to Bowling Green.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing that we should have seen at that point in time. But, so they end up winning it in the least decisive way. And then 2 weeks later, they lose to Bowling Green in the quarterfinals. So, with that evidence, that recent evidence, do you blame us for not picking Ferris?
We can only go on the data at hand.
Yeah.
I gotta say one other thing on this. Don't like your own Facebook status posts.
Oh!
How much worse is it when one person likes it and it's you? Sorry.
Can Can you retweet yourself?
I'm the man, and everybody knows it. Because I said so.
What's got two thumbs and likes what I just wrote? This guy.
All right.
You can, so can I get a ruling? Can you retweet yourself? Or is
that... wouldn't that, like, isn't that like seeing a picture of a picture in a picture?
It's like the House of Mirrors.
Yeah, where it's like Butthead hitting a tattoo on his butt.
I did. With a... I did a self-retweet last year. You know what? I didn't retweet it. We ran it in the first shift tweet of the week. It was a like mid-January night. I was like, I can't believe Harvard and Colgate are in last place. they're too good for this. And then they ended up not being in last place, kind of. One playoff series, and it looked somewhat like I knew what I was talking about.
Hmm. Good story.
Yeah, cool story, bro.
I think retweeting yourself is kind of like when Jess said that Gladdy is the poor man's Gladdy. Which, if you know Gladdy, makes complete sense.
Yeah. I'm kind of a mess.
You're that guy.
A little bit of a dumpster fire over there.
We talking about Mankato again?
What?
All right. Well, we've got about a 2-hour podcast here, folks. So why don't we wrap it up?
We're reaching audiobook status very soon.
Yeah.
And we got Morgan Freeman come in and read it next time. Give him a transcript.
Make you sound a lot better. I know that.
Well, you could hit a duck with a bat, and it would sound better than me by the end of these things. But I'm surprised I haven't lost my voice yet.
All right, for...
Can hit a duck with a bat. PETA's going to be calling any minute.
Bring no him ducks, on.
No ducks were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Yet.
A chicken was...
Although there's still time.
Yeah.
Well, not if we get out of here. All right, for Kevin Zeese, James V. Dowd, Jess Myers, Mike Eidelbus... My name is Joe Gladyszewski. This is the Inch Podcast.
Just a bunch of hoseheads. I'm glad we're done with these guys.
Yeah!